That's good. And welcome back to the History on the Rocks podcast. This is your host, Cody. Of course, joining me, it's Saturday, and we're delayed, but Audrey is here.
Hello.
We've had a crazy week.
Yes, we have.
We weren't able to put this episode out on Thursday because our air conditioning went out, and that was fun to deal with.
Yep, it was great.
Yeah.
It was hot.
It was hotter than hell. So we're at least trying to get this episode out to you this weekend to make up for Thursday and hopefully get back on our normal schedule. Summer's just been kind of crazy. I've been teaching summer school and Audrey's had to do a lot of work at home because she's got summer hours.
Yep.
Get a lot done. So
yes.
We're not drinking anything right now.
No.
No. It's like
probably could have like a mimosa right now, but
yeah, I put Bailey's in my coffee a little bit.
Just yeah, every Saturday
morning. But that was a little bit ago. But we are talking about common phrases part four today, our fourth part of this series. And I found some good ones that I can't believe I kind of looked over for earlier episodes. But we do have some good ones. So
let's get to it.
Our first one is Achilles heel.
Like your weakness.
It's your weakness, yeah. It refers to a person's point of greatest vulnerability or a critical weakness, despite overall strength. So, if you know anything about mythology, Achilles is a hero in Greek mythology, right? He's from the Iliad, Homer's epic. He's the son of the mortal Peleus and the sea nymph Thetis. I think that's how you say it. I'm not that big on Greek mythology, but I know like the big ones like Achilles. So Thetis tries to make Achilles immortal by dipping him into the river Styx. However, she held him by his heel, leaving it untouched by the waters that granted invulnerability. As a result, his heel remained his only vulnerable spot. So in the epic, that's why it's your Achilles heels, because that is the only part that stuck out to not make him completely immortal. Which, if you snap your Achilles or someone cuts your Achilles, like, just in general, the, you know, outside of this, you know, metaphorical use of the phrase, that's really bad.
You're like done for.
Yeah, like
for a while.
You cannot walk. There's some creepy like true crime stuff about that where like a guy would hide under. I've heard the story where a guy would hide under cars in mall parking lots and cut the Achilles heel of women so that they couldn't run away so he could kidnap them. But yeah, like your Achilles heel is whatever your weakness is. So like, great teams, right? Baseball, like if you're talking sports, hockey, obviously. We watched the game 6 last night, the Stanley Cup final.
Crazy series.
Yeah. You always have an Achilles heel because you can be super strong, but there's always a weakness somewhere that your opponent tries to find.
And the Oilers found the Panthers' Achilles heel.
Yeah. They broke down their defense pretty badly. All right. Number 2, the writing on the wall. This one always confused me sometimes of how it was used, but then when I looked it up again and started reading it, it makes more sense. So if I said, hey, the writing's on the wall.
I feel like I can't explain it. Like in my head, I like feel like I would know what it means, but I don't know how to describe it.
Yeah, so it means that something's like inevitable. And foreseen, like something's going to happen. And usually it's some like impending doom or misfortune that's about to happen. So
like you can see it.
Yeah. Like, you know, it's inevitable that it's going to happen. And it's usually something bad. Like, hey, the writing's on the wall. This is going to happen. Just don't know when. Right.
Yeah. The air conditioner is 21 years old and
yeah, the writing's on the wall that it's going to break down again at some point. So it originates from a biblical story found in the book of Daniel. It comes from chapter 5 in the Old Testament of the Bible, and the story that involves Belshazzar, the king of Babylon, who holds a great feast. During the feast, a disembodied hand appears and writes mysterious words on the wall of the royal palace. The words are Mene, Mene, Tekel, Apharsin. None of the king's wise men can interpret the writing, so Daniel, a Jewish exile renowned for his wisdom, is summoned. Daniel interprets the words as a prophecy of doom for Belshazzar and his kingdom. So the word Mene means God has numbered the days of your reign and brought it to an end. Tekel, you have been weighed on the scales and found wanting. So kind of a judgment thing. And then Apharsin and Peres, or Peres, P-E-R-E-S, your kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and Persians. So that very night, Belshazzar is slain, and Darius the Mede takes over the kingdom. So these writings on the wall from this biblical story kind of foreshadow this inevitable fall of Belshazzar and his kingdom being taken over by someone else.
Hmm.
Yeah. So you can use the writing. I've heard Writing on the Wall. It's a really good Under Oath song.
Hmm.
You know it.
Oh.
But you probably just don't know it by title.
Probably.
So if anyone listens to Under Oath, Writing on the Wall is one of their really, really old album song. It's an older song on an old album like I used to listen to in high school. All right. This next one is actually a not so common phrase.
Yeah, I feel like I haven't heard this one.
This was suggested by number one, New York Times bestselling author.
Oh.
Doug Stanton on our Facebook page.
Okay.
Yeah, Doug's been following the page. He comments and shares some stuff, so it's really cool. He's still following after we did our Horse Soldier series and our interview with him. So appreciate it, Doug. Thanks for the, you know, shout outs and commenting on our stuff. And he suggested the phrase "red up the table."
Yeah, I've never heard this one.
I've never heard this one either. And it means to clear the table and then, like, set it back up for the next meal.
Okay.
So after you're done eating, you red up the table. So if I said, like, I'm going to red up the table, I'm going to clear everything off and
set
it back up. So this is interesting because I read online, there's a lot of people that don't know this. They've never heard this. There was a person that's from the South who was visiting family in Ohio, and they were like, yeah, they used the phrase "red up the table," and I had no idea what that meant. This is a really, like, regional term, and it's mostly used in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And in Ohio area right there. And it's because this form of speech comes from German settlers, is what I found.
Hmm.
And the Pennsylvania Dutch.
Yeah.
It said that, like, Pennsylvania Dutch is the mishearing of Pennsylvania Deutsch, so it's German.
Yeah.
So I found this interesting, obviously, with my German lineage, that this phrase is rooted in Middle Low German and comes from the term redden, R-E-D-D-E-N, which means to make ready, put in order, tidy, organize, pay, or settle, and the old Dutch verb redento, which means to put right, settle, tidy up, or put in order.
Hmm.
So when you say red up the table, the word red, as in, like, redden in German, is like to make it ready or to tidy it up, organize it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really specific linguistically just like to that Pennsylvania kind of Ohio area because of its
origin of it.
Well, because of its, yeah, its settlers, German settlers is what I found.
Yeah.
So not sure if that's 100% correct, Doug, but that's what I found. So hopefully that's where we were going with that because it's really not. I had to look on a bunch of message boards and stuff. There wasn't like a, you know, a linguistic kind of website that had this because it's a very more uncommon phrase that's more derived from just the lineage of that group.
Yeah, and
the language,
location.
The German language and the Dutch language. But thanks, Doug, for the for the suggestion. That was a really interesting one. I had never heard that one before either. So
very I don't cool. know anybody really. Oh, I guess we know somebody from Pennsylvania. I wonder if Marnie has ever heard that one.
Yeah.
Other than that, I don't really know anybody from.
Have to ask our
area.
East Coast family if they've ever heard that one.
Yeah, for sure.
Number four, keep the ball rolling.
Just keep going.
Yeah.
Keep it going.
Yeah, maintain the momentum or continue an activity or process that is already in progress. The exact origin of this is very uncertain, but it's believed to have originated in the 19th century. One theory links it to the game of rugby or soccer, where keeping the ball in play and moving it is crucial to the game's process, right? Because obviously, got to keep the ball rolling.
Definitely soccer.
Another theory suggests it might be related to political campaigns back in the 1800s, where rolling the ball was a metaphor for maintaining momentum and enthusiasm among supporters.
Hmm, that makes sense.
I also found, and I didn't write it down, but I remember reading it, that there's also a tie to this, and I'm going to look it up really quick because the story was interesting. Benjamin Harrison did this as a publicity stunt in 1888 during his presidential campaign. He rolled a huge ball covered with campaign slogans halfway across the country. And I'm going to have to put this on our website because there is a picture of it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that's what I was looking for, and I forgot to write this down. But the ball was a replica of one built for Harrison's grandfather, William Henry Harrison, for his 1840 presidential campaign. The gimmick gave rise to the phrase, keep the ball rolling. So Harrison, a Republican, challenged Democrat and sitting President Grover Cleveland in the 1888 presidential election. Harrison lost the popular by a narrow margin, but became president by winning in the Electoral College. So that was interesting. That's from the this is from the Library of Congress blogs that I was just reading this article. So this is where I was seeing it when I was doing this, and I totally forgot to add this in. But that's, I knew I saw it. It has to do with the political campaign, but I knew there was someone who actually had like this giant ball that was rolled.
I feel like that would be the origin. I mean, how else would you have?
I mean, the soccer and rugby one makes sense, but
because I mean, like, it's literal.
If you're using it in a phrase, like, and you're trying to maintain momentum, right? Like, we got to keep the ball rolling. The political aspect of it makes the most sense.
Yeah, and he literally made a ball and kept it rolling.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah,
it is. Pretty literal. Number five, I love this one because it's. I heard you hear this all the time, but if you ever watch the movie Boondock Saints, it's in the beginning of that movie, and I just think it's so funny. But rule of thumb.
I mean, it's a rule.
Yeah, I mean, it refers to a general principle derived from a practice or experience rather than a theory. So it's like a general principle of something. But like there's a rule of thumb to something, which means it's like the way to do it, the general way that you do it. So the origin of the phrase rule of thumb is somewhat obscure, and several theories exist on this one. There's a debunked myth, and this is the one at the beginning of Boondock Saints, because they're working in a meatpacking plant, and there's this big woman that works there. Like, she looks like a big, like, German woman almost, but this is in Boston, and they walk in, and they're kind of giving her shit, and he said something to her, like, rule of thumb. He's teaching her how to do something in the meatpacking plant. He says, rule of thumb, and she's kind of, like, very feminist, you know? And she's like, rule of thumb? And it comes from this debunked theory that old English law allowed a man to beat his wife with a stick no thicker than his thumb.
Oh, I feel like, yeah, I've heard that before, I think.
But there's no historical evidence supporting this claim, apparently.
Hmm.
But this is like the one theory that a lot of people think it is, that like you could hitch your wife as long as the stick was thinner than your thumb.
Yeah. I mean, decently small, but. Even something small can do damage.
I'm telling you, the smaller, the more it hurts because it's like a whip.
Yeah.
I think I'd rather be hit with something blunt in the leg than like whipped in the leg.
No, that's true. I just wouldn't want to be hit at all, but.
No, I mean that either. The more plausible origin of this points to the use of the thumb as like a measurement tool, such as carpenters using width of their thumb to make quick measurements. This usage dates back to the 17th century, where the thumb served as an informal unit of measure approximately an inch wide.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that kind of makes sense, too, that your thumb is about an inch wide, so you can kind of estimate the length of something or how much you need to cut using the rule of thumb.
Well, and you'll always have, like, the same measurement if you're using the same thumb.
That is true. I think my thumbs are the same width apart. Yeah, they are.
I don't know. They probably are. Pretty close.
Yeah, I think it depends on your hands, too, how big they are, but...
Well, yeah, everyone's thumb's going to be a different size, but...
That's the rule of thumb.
Hmm. Interesting.
Number six, pulling someone's leg.
Joking.
Yeah, joking around. To tease or joke with someone by telling them something that is not true, with the intention of fooling them in a playful way, not being really malicious. The origin of this is kind of interesting. We have two theories, and they're not... really that fun.
Oh.
They're not playful.
Oh. Hmm.
The exact origin of the phrase pulling someone's leg has these two theories, a street crime theory and an execution theory. The street crime theory is the one that suggests that the idiom comes from the 18th or 19th century street crime in London, where thieves would literally pull a person's leg to trip them up and then rob them. However, again, more lack of evidence here. There's also the execution theory, where this theory links the idiom to public hangings, where it is said that friends or family members would pull on the legs of the hanged person to hasten the death and reduce suffering. And again, little concrete evidence to support this origin. But more plausibly, the idiom likely evolved as a metaphorical way to describe teasing or fooling someone, the way a physical tug might unbalance or surprise a person.
Oh, well, yeah, I guess that makes sense.
So, like, you're pulling their leg and throwing them off balance, like, you're messing with them.
Yeah.
You know? But I thought for something that's supposed to be like joking around, I thought those two theories were like the exact opposite.
Not joking around.
Yeah, exactly.
pretty serious.
Like running amok. Remember that one where we were talking about like demonic stuff
Yep.
in amok, Southeast
amok,
Asia?
Amok, amok, amok.
Yeah. That one had very dark origins as well.
Yeah.
All right. Number 7, steal someone's thunder.
So they have like big news and you're going to have bigger news.
Yeah. And you're going to take attention away from them.
Like when Monica and Chandler get engaged and Rachel steals her thunder.
Yeah. There you go. Friends reference.
Yep. It's usually always a Friends reference and everything.
Leave it to Audrey for the Friends reference. But it is. Yeah. I mean, you stole my thunder. Yeah, you're taking attention or praise away from someone by presenting the achievements of your own or by doing something that overshadows their accomplishments.
Mm-hmm.
So the phrase steal someone's thunder has a well-documented origin dating back to the early 18th century. It comes from a man named John Dennis, who was an English playwright and critic. He invented a new method of creating the sound of thunder for his play Appius and Virginia in 1709. However, the play was not successful and soon closed. Later, the same thunder effect was used in the production of Macbeth at the same theater.
Oh.
Dennis reportedly exclaimed, this is a quote, "Damn them, they will not let my play run, but they steal my thunder," end quote. Thus, the phrase came to describe taking someone else's idea or invention and using it to one's advantage, especially in a way that deprives their original creator of recognition.
Yeah, because Macbeth was very popular.
Macbeth is huge. They still read it today in school.
Exactly.
And yeah, John Dennis came up with this new thunder in the theater, and then he was like, hey, that's my invention.
I did that.
And then Macbeth blew up.
Yeah. Very. And
John
very
Dennis probably sulked. But yeah, that's a pretty literal meaning of stealing someone's thunder.
I wonder how he made the thunder.
I don't know. I didn't look that part up.
No. That'd be interesting.
Yeah, I didn't go that far into seeing how he made the thunder, but my audio engineering passed.
I don't think they had much audio back then.
Well, no, but it's Foley design. So it's like using different, you know, finding a sound in, you know, everyday items, right,
yeah,
to create that thunder.
Like a drum.
Yeah. Like how, like a drum. You can use drums, multiple drums.
Mm-hmm.
But like the lightsaber noise.
Yeah.
The pshoom.
Mm-hmm.
That's literally a slinky that hangs from a ceiling, and they flick it.
Really?
And you put the microphone at the bottom, and it makes that noise as it comes down.
Oh, huh, well, that one's interesting.
Yeah. It's called Foley recording, and it's really cool. Like, you can take everyday items. Like, I could take the keg over there. I have an empty keg in the basement right now. I could take that keg, and it makes sounds on it that sound similar to, like, something else.
You can make thunder.
With the keg?
Maybe.
No.
Oh.
That's not deep enough.
Oh. Never mind.
It wouldn't make a deep enough sound. That would actually, if you took metal on metal there, you can make like sword noises or something, I bet.
Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah.
That would make sense.
But Foley design's a lot of fun because it's like really creative. And there's a lot you can do with it.
Yeah. It's like ASMR.
ASMR is cool. That's very calming.
Yeah. Well, it's supposed to be. Touching the microphone.
It's just rubbing stuff on the microphone and, you know, making sounds that calm you.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's Foley too, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Foley sounds. All right, number 8. Knock on wood.
If you say something and like you don't want it to happen, knock on wood.
Right. Using it to prevent bad luck, or you make a hopeful or positive statement.
Knock on wood.
And you knock on wood because you want to prevent bad luck and prevent it from not happening.
Should have knocked on wood after I said the air conditioner was going to break.
Yeah. Literally, Audrey said the day before it broke, she's like, I hope that it breaks so we can use our warranty because our warranty runs out this year. And literally, it started to fail that night and then didn't turn on the next day.
Yep. Or honestly, it was probably not turning on that night. I just didn't know it yet.
It just started to heat up in the house slowly.
Slowly heat up because it was at night,
yeah,
so it wasn't as hot. But yep, that should have knocked down wood on that one.
Should have knocked down wood, definitely. So, again, this has an unclear origin, but there are theories that exist. So, you get to pick whichever one you like. Ancient pagan beliefs. Some believe the idiom dates back to ancient pagan cultures, such as the Celts, who believed that spirits and gods resided in trees and that knocking on wood was a way to call upon these spirits for protection or thank them for good fortune.
Okay.
The Christian tradition links it to the Christian practice of touching wood, symbolizing the wooden cross of Jesus, to seek divine protection or blessing.
Mm-hmm.
And then medieval superstition being the third, in medieval Europe, it was common to knock on wood to ward off evil spirits or to prevent them from hearing and thus jinxing one's good fortune. So
interesting.
Those are all pretty religious theories right there. Pagan beliefs, Christian beliefs, and medieval superstition, because the medieval times, everyone's religious back then, whether you're Protestant, whatever. But yeah, evil spirits.
Yeah, gods.
Keep them away. Gods and Jesus and the cross. Number 9. I love this phrase. Caught between a rock and a hard place.
Between a rock and a hard place.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that song. Yeah, Bailey Zimmerman. totally forgot about that song. But yeah.
You're kind of like screwed either way.
Yeah, neither option is desirable.
Yep.
The person is faced with two difficult choices, signifies being in a dilemma with no easy or favorable solution.
Mm-hmm.
So this phrase is believed to come from the early 20th century America, specifically related to the labor dispute involving copper miners in Bisbee, Arizona.
Bisbee.
In 1917, the end of World War I. The miners were striking for better wages and working conditions, and the company responded harshly, forcing them to choose between continuing to work under poor conditions or face unemployment and potential blacklisting.
I feel like that still happens to people.
It does. This is definitely still a thing. This predicament was described as being between a rock and a hard place. The phrase, however, can also be seen as a simple metaphor, with the rock and the hard place representing two equally tough situations, forcing someone to make a difficult decision.
Yeah, I like that one.
And like being miners, you're definitely stuck in between rocks and hard places.
For sure. Yes, you are.
Not good. Our last phrase is number 10 here, to butter someone up. Butter me up.
Like, it can be like in a like flirty kind of way or romantic kind of way, like giving compliments, and it's kind of my thought of it.
Well, yeah, you can definitely use it in that way, or also like kind of trying to get what you want kind of way.
Yeah.
To flatter or praise someone excessively, but usually with the intention of gaining their favor or obtaining something from them.
Mm-hmm.
So like when we were kids, you'd butter up your parents for someone to sleep
please.
Over. You know what I mean? Like, you'd be really nice to your parents.
I'll do your chore. Yeah, I'll do my chores.
I'll do this.
I'll
do
clean
that.
My room.
Exactly. So the exact origin of the phrase butter someone up, also not well documented, but there are a couple of traditions here in different cultural practices. The first is the ancient Indian tradition. One theory here suggests that the idiom originates from an ancient Indian practice of throwing butter balls at statues of gods to seek favor and forgiveness. I've actually heard of that one before.
Oh,
studying ancient Indian cultures, and we're talking about South Asia, India, not Native Americans, just to clarify that for people. But yeah, in India, I've heard this, especially in the Hindu culture, of throwing butterballs on the statues of their gods to seek favor and forgiveness.
Hmm.
There's also the metaphorical evolution, that the idiom comes from the metaphorical idea of spreading butter on bread, making it smooth and pleasing, much like how flattering words intend to make someone more amenable or agreeable.
Yeah, I like putting butter on my bread.
Yeah, butter my bread.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually another term. Like, that's another way to say it.
Butter my bread.
Like, go ahead, butter my bread.
talk me up.
Yeah, talk me up. Yeah, exactly. Make me, you know, want to do something for you. Go ahead, butter me up.
Tell me all the good things.
You can use butter. You can use butter for a lot of different metaphors and idiom type phrases.
Some like peanut butter, where it's sticky and gooey.
Yeah,
and butter is just spreadable.
Spreadable. Spread the butter. Spread the butter.
Those are good ones.
Those were good ones. I was kind of shocked that I missed some of these. Like, didn't even have them on my list, and then I went back to like look for some more idioms, and I was like, oh, I've totally forgot about like half of these.
Yeah, for sure. And a lot of them, you know, are common, like I've heard of.
Oh, yeah. I hear Achilles heel all the time. Writing on the wall is, I hear that more in like music, more poetic phrases. Red up the table, never heard that one.
Yep, nope.
Thanks, Doug, for that.
Never heard of that one.
Keep the ball rolling, hear that all the time.
Yep.
Rule the thumb, hear that all the time. Pulling someone's leg, I'm just pulling your leg.
Yep.
Hear that all the time. Let's see.
Just joshing you. Oh, that's another one.
Just joshing you.
Just joshing.
Oh, I'm going to have to. Yeah, I'm going to have to figure where that one came out from.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Steal someone's thunder, knock on wood. We do that all the time. Caught between a rock and a hard place, hear that often, butter someone up. Yeah, so these were really common ones, except for, you know, the one I had to throw in for Doug, because that was interesting.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Glad we got an episode out for you guys.
Yeah.
At least
Sorry, this it's weekend. Delayed.
Sorry, it is delayed. Yes, but
we're usually more on top of having them done before the week starts. But
we got out of school and we're kind of not in our
normal routine.
So I have stuff written now at least for the upcoming weeks. So we'll get to recording them and start getting them back out on Thursday mornings. So hey, we hope you enjoy your weekend. It's always a pleasure. We will see you. Not see you.
Well,
we'll be talking to you next week on the History on the Rocks podcast. We hope you have a good weekend. Go see some family, friends, have some fun.
Have some drinks.
Cool. Hey, stay cool if you're in the heat wave.
Yeah.
But anywhere else, hopefully it's beautiful. Summer is here.
Yeah. I think it's like officially summer now, isn't it?
It is officially summer as of Thursday and yesterday, really.
Oh, summer your solstice. Birthday.
Yeah.
Your birthday. Happy birthday.
Thanks. My birthday was the longest day of the year this year.
Oh, you got just that extra daylight.
16 hours and 9 minutes of daylight, it was said here. So that was kind of crazy.
Yeah.
All right, y'all. We will talk to you next week.
All right. Cheers.
Cheers.